Please make yourselves comfortable. So I had a question for the kids and I have a question for you guys. How many of you have gotten a copy of the annual meeting reports and devoured them, read through them cover to cover, taken notes, some marginalia all over them? Yeah, that's what I thought. That's fair. I get that. The kids' question was a lot easier, wasn't it? Do you like presents? Yeah, okay. It's nice to get one yes in. So today is the Feast of the Presentation. It does have the very long other name, and we'll come to all of that in a second. And it, I think, works out in some ways quite nicely that it's our annual meeting, because it is the annual meeting reports. I know you've devoured them, but they are in some ways a summary of the things we have presented to God. They are our work and our efforts, whether it is checking fire alarms and emergency lights and worrying about windows and roofs, or keeping track of altar linens and how much bread and wine we need, whether it is people who come and help and do work here in the service or appear in the middle of the week and clean bathrooms. These are all things we have done, and we have done them for love and for faith. But now I want to go back to the lesson, because there's a lot going on in the gospel here, and I want to take just a minute to unpack some of that. Because while I think most of it was probably easily understandable to a largely Jewish first century audience, for a largely Gentile Christian 21st century audience, I know that I'm going to guess that a lot of people's eyes sort of just get to the Song of Simeon, which we mostly know from evening prayer or Compline, and that's it. We're done. It makes us feel good and we're happy. But at the very beginning, actually, I kind of want to go back one verse before we began, which is not entirely fair, but the verse before this is the verse that reads, "When the time came, they circumcised him and gave him the name Jesus." So that has already happened, and we've moved on to the presentation, when the time for their purification came. So here's a question, and I'm kind of looking at this quadrant of the church because I'm going to guess you'll be the only people who understand what comes out of my mouth in a second. How many of you know what I mean when I say the churching of women? Oh, wow, it's just me. This happens to me. I'm used to it. I didn't think it would be on this one, though. The churching of women? Nope. Okay. So this is the slightly more updated version of what's going on in this passage. So when I was in seminary, I worked at two different parishes, and the first one was a parish of Caribbean American immigrants. They were largely first and second generation. It was really easy to tell if they liked your sermon or if they didn't like your sermon, so that made it a little complicated because they were still of the type of Anglican that all wore hats. And when the hats started moving, you knew you were either doing really well or in a lot of trouble. But it was very clear you were doing something and they were paying attention. And there was one woman who gave birth in the time I was there, and then this really odd thing to my sensibilities happened. We didn't see her. She was not there, and even odder, nobody said anything about it. Because she was honoring this tradition that goes back to what is happening here. That there is a period of time after the birth of a child where a woman is not expected to come to church. Now, a lot of ink gets spilled about why that is. There are some people and there are some theologians in history that have written about how childbirth is unclean and therefore they should not pollute the church with their presence. I think most women who have recently given birth would argue that they don't want to go anywhere and their husband had better be doing more things around the house in those first few weeks after church. So you can take your pick of women who have given birth or celibate males who wrote theology as to which one is likely more correct. It's your choice. Entirely your choice there. But this is what's going on. So in Leviticus, there is the law that is laid out for the purification of women after childbirth. You can go read it. I think it's Leviticus 12, if my memory is serving correctly. I only know that because I was reading it earlier this week in preparation. I have not memorized Leviticus. Do not worry. But that is what has happened. Is about 31 days. The purification of the churching of women was about 40 days, or the closest Sunday. After childbirth, the woman would go and, in modern Judaism, I think it's more of a mikvah thing, in this time, there's the sacrifice of turtle doves. This is how we know Mary and Joseph were poor. This is the sacrifice that's offered for people who can't afford the pricier options, because the temple believed in sort of a sliding scale sacrificial system. Very progressive of them. But there's also this weird little law that about your firstborn male. A woman's firstborn male, not the guy's. Guys, you're sort of second fiddle here. Where it ties back to the firstborn, the sacrifice of the firstborn with Exodus. Because of all of this, and it gets complicated, you had the option to redeem your child from temple service. Just go with it. It gets complicated. Which also happens, not coincidentally, I think, because you don't argue with women who have just given birth, about 31 days after their birth. So that all makes sense. That this is where we have come to. Jesus is about 1 month old, and his parents have decided, and this is where it stops making sense, to take him on a road trip to Jerusalem. They don't live in Jerusalem. Jesus wasn't born in Jerusalem. But they haul him back there, which raises a question I think every parent who has traveled, not just with a newborn, but with a young child, would ask of, why? What about this makes sense? Luke, as many of us know a little bit, I think, I hope, is very concerned with the Jewishness of Jesus. Mary's song, Simeon's song, all of this, the stories of Elizabeth and Zechariah and John, are deeply steeped in Jewish tradition and Jewish practice. So here we get Mary and Joseph, who, even though they don't live in Jerusalem, and the only thing not doing this would keep them from is participating in the life of the temple. So they don't live there. They aren't in the temple every week. They aren't being kept from anything on a weekly basis. Are making this sacrifice of time and money and energy and I'm sure just stress level to travel with an infant to go back to the temple and complete what is right according to the laws. It is extreme religiousness. These would be the people who come every time you open the doors of a church, and every church and every religious body I know of loves them, but all of their neighbors are like, they know they don't really have to do that, right? That's sort of who Mary and Joseph are here. And I like that. Because I have gotten to know you all a little bit. You don't have to show up and keep count of altar linens, which I know Maxine does. She smiles because she's like, someone's got to do it. You don't have to come and mop and sweep the floor before a funeral because you want people to not worry about the church, which I know people have done. Lonnie isn't here today, but I know she comes and cleans the church when I'm not here. I know how much you all care. And that on this day when we remember sort of the extreme religious devotion of Mary and Joseph, you all share in that. You have shown me that time and time again already, in how things just happen. And I joke about the annual meeting report book. I suspect that most of you already know most of the things that are in there, but it is in some ways a summary of your love and devotion for this church and this community. So even if you don't read it, I hope you take a moment to stop and remember all of the ways you show love to God and to this community and to each other. Because there's a lot that has to happen at the annual meeting. There's some legal things and some procedural things. But at the end of the day, that is what it is in celebration of. That is why you have brought food and the tables have been set up. That is why you have brought yourself to church on a day when you will be here longer and with less time to socialize. Because as much as we might complain about this, it matters. Not in and of itself, but because this is what enables all of the other things we do. This is what lets this morning and this act of worship happen. All of the details and logistics, all of the things you do, maybe not because you love each of them, but because you love each other. Just as Mary and Joseph loved Jesus, just as Anna and Simeon, who we'll have to come back to some other morning because they are fabulous and amazing, but time is a thing. Just as they loved God and therefore could love and appreciate Jesus, just as we love Jesus, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Amen.